The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on yet another week of broadcasting here on KPCG.FM, Trumpet Radio. This is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Last night at Armstrong Auditorium, we were able to host Melanie Phillips, the distinguished journalist from right here in the UK. She writes for the Times of London. And she was there at Armstrong Auditorium live last night at 6 p.m., I believe. And also, it was pretty cool to see this morning on Facebook that evidently there was a live broadcast of the address on Facebook. And that's how I didn't stay up for it to watch it live myself. But in watching it this morning, it was an excellent presentation and lots of good back and forth, too, with some of the questions that the audience members asked. And throughout the program, or at least later on here in the first segment, we'll be playing a few segments or clips from her address last night. Joel Hilliker, the editor, managing editor of the Trumpet magazine, he introduced her to the audience there last night, and he referred to a speech or a presentation she gave at Berkeley last week. This was in front of a Jewish audience of about 100 students or so. And as part of that that presentation, she recorded a video on the Berkeley campus. This is from, I believe, last Thursday. And notice how she introduced this lecture that she was about to give to the Berkeley students. This is clip 6.
I'm on the campus of the University of California at Berkeley, where conservative speakers are being systematically censored by violent protests designed to prevent them from speaking at all. I'm standing on Sproul Plaza in the center of the campus, where free speech was supposedly enshrined back in the 1960s, but where it is now appallingly being suppressed. This is the university campus where conservative views are being routinely called fascism and shouted down, as you can probably see from the posters on this campus notice board to which I'm walking. This is the campus where Jewish students in particular are being intimidated by threatening pro-Palestinian demonstrators. I was originally asked to speak at Berkeley Hillel, the Jewish student center here, but remarkably, that too was considered just too dangerous for me. So I had to speak instead to Jewish students at another, much more discreet center on campus. These students had to be personally coaxed to attend my meeting because Jewish students at Berkeley are now simply too frightened for their own safety to attend pro-Israel presentations. That is the truly shocking state of affairs in this prestigious seat of learning today.
The shocking state of affairs in modern education today, Berkeley, of course, being one of the most prestigious campuses in the United States of America. And she's one of many now, more recently, or most recently, I guess it was Ann Coulter from a week or two ago, and then a month or two before that, another speaker from here in the UK, I believe he is. But this just happens routinely now. And this is the seat of higher learning in the United States of America. Conservative voices that are being shouted down or systematically censored, as she said there. Well, she got quite a different reception there at Armstrong College, and I'll get to that in just a second. But for a moment, just think about some of the things that Herbert Armstrong talked about many years ago about the problem with modern education and how that it's almost wholly materialistic and that it develops the machine, as he wrote in 1971. I mean, all these modern and sophisticated advances in technology. But what about developing the human mind? What about developing human beings? He said in that 71 piece that we've drifted so far down the path of materialism, so far down this path, and that education's in crisis as a result. Mr. Armstrong said the real problem with it, education that is what's being taught and how it's being taught as well. He basically boiled it down to this. They concern themselves with teaching young people how to make a living, and that's it. They don't teach them how to live. They don't give them the truth about the world today. And so you have individuals like Melanie Phillips who are out there just trying to get the truth across. And she can't even speak at the Jewish Union there on the Berkeley campus. Too dangerous. It's too dangerous for her to go in there with the facts. Alan Bloom's classic text, The Closing of the American Mind. We use this at Armstrong College. They used it at Ambassador College back when I was a student in the 1980s. But Professor Bloom, who has since died, and he was by no means a right-wing conservative, but he wrote back in the mid-1980s, the so-called knowledge explosion and increasing specialization have not filled up the college years, but emptied them. The knowledge explosion has actually emptied the college years. He says these great universities, which can split the atom, find cures for the most terrible diseases, conduct surveys of whole populations, and produce massive dictionaries of lost languages, cannot generate a modest program of general education for undergraduate students. He says this is a parable for our time. It's a parable for our time today. Now, he wrote that back in the 1980s, as I say, and was really writing about a lot of things in the 80s that Herbert Armstrong was talking about in the 1960s. The fact that we were focusing in on the machine rather than the man, and how that would end up destroying our families and destroying our communities and eventually destroying our society. Well, Mr. Armstrong got his analysis. He got it straight from the Bible, from passages like Romans 1, where it says the truth can, it should be so plain to them. Verse 20 of Romans 1 says, ever since the creation of the world, his invisible nature, namely his eternal power and deity, has been clearly perceived in the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. The invisible things of God, including God himself, are clearly seen by the visible creation, including man, fearfully and wonderfully made, it says in the Psalms. It says, although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their senseless minds were darkened. That's Romans 1. I'm reading from at least those two verses from the Revised Standard Version. And then it continues in the King James, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. All of this because we didn't retain God in our knowledge. There's no foundation under the structure. And so you have the confusion that you see on so many campuses today. God's revelation has been expelled. God has been expelled. And so it's so hard. It's a struggle just to get any kind of truth in there. To get any kind of truth to students today. Because God's family government is not present, except at one institution. It says, and since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a base mind and improper conduct. He just gave them over to a reprobate mind. And so you have universities today where, as Mr. Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages, little or nothing is taught about God. It's evolution. It's all evolution, and that's it. And these students go through the educational system, and they just come out like robots, told what to believe, told what to accept as truth, as fiction. And it leads to all kinds of sins, as it says there at the end of Romans 1. I mean, that's what modern education has produced. Paul said, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God. I mean, he just goes on and on without understanding, just not a basic understanding of the facts. That's gone. And you say, well, how can you say modern education caused this? Well, you can at least admit, hopefully, that modern education certainly hasn't solved these problems. And in fact, if your eyes are open to the truth, you know that in so many ways, the modern educational system is the cause, or one of the primary ones, anyway. Mr. Armstrong said in 1965, the future welfare and even the existence of civilization is dependent on the educational system. What does it say about our future when you have these kinds of things going on college campuses today? Anything goes. Anything goes. I mean, here she is on the Berkeley campus. This campus that supposedly was a champion for free speech back in the 1960s. And now you have conservative speakers being banned or suppressed, shouted down as fascist. How far have we come? Are we really making progress? You think about things Mr. Armstrong was saying, like that quote I just gave to you, 1965. And then look at where we are today. Our educational system has failed us. It's failed us. It still develops the machine, but certainly not the man. Certainly not man and men and women. Certainly not the human mind. Well, as I say, you can see just how unique and different it is at God's College, Herbert W. Armstrong College, where this woman, this courageous woman, she gets to the end of her address, and that's an extended applause, a standing ovation, in fact. It's very different. At God's College, there were no protests leading up to this address, leading up to this lecture. She received a very warm welcome, and she continues with her visit today. She's going to be talking to the editorial staff at thetrumpet.com. She's met up with our representative, Brent Nachtigall, over in Jerusalem. He's actually given her a tour through the Ophel excavation site in the city of David. She spends a fair bit of time over in Israel. It's interesting, even in the address from last night, she talked about the history, that even excavations and artifacts, I mean, they're revealing Israel's roots there in the Middle East almost on a daily basis. This is what she had to say about some of those archaeological finds last night. This is clip one.
There have been the most astonishing excavations going on, as you may well know, of the site of the ancient Jewish temple in Jerusalem. Astonishing excavations of artifacts such as coins and inscriptions on stone, carvings on stone, which bear direct testimony to the kings who we read about in the Hebrew Bible, having existed there, having ruled there. Amazing, amazing excavations. Almost every month, a new treasure, a new set of treasures is being uncovered.
And she goes on to say how that a lot of that, but particularly where it's controlled by the Palestinians, a lot of it's being destroyed, buried, because they don't want the truth to be made known. And even when it is publicized, like we try to do, with those findings that Dr. Mazar turns up in her excavations. There still are quite a few people, highly educated people, right there in and around Jerusalem, that reject it, that deny it, that say, well, it's not true. It didn't happen. The Israelis are making it up. So-and-so's a liar. And it's really hard to disseminate the truth today because this world is in such thick darkness, as it says in John 3. Well, as you know, this organization, the Philadelphia Church of God, Armstrong College, we've supported a number of those excavations. Right there at the foot of the Temple Mount, starting in 2006, another one in 2007 and 2008, 2009. We sent, I think it was 17 or 18 students over, as well as my family, there for 6-7 months in 2012. We had another sizable group over there in 2013. And by the sounds of it, hopefully we'll be resuming some kind of excavation at the Ophel here in the next few months. We'll see. It's always a little bit iffy. Things really have to come together just right for it to be off and running. But I know there's lots of students at the college, Armstrong College in Edmond here at Edstone, that are anxious to get in there and dig and to turn up these historical records talked about in the Hebrew Bible, as Melanie Phillips said. Well, she went through a lot of the history and how that a lot of the assumptions about the so-called Arab-Israeli conflict are just flat out wrong. And this is how she summarized her her material last night, her conclusion. This is clip two.
So, in conclusion, I would say this, that a false narrative about Israel has driven, in my view, the whole of Western foreign policy and ethics off the rails, because the arguments against Israel are ignorant, they are based on lies, and they are irrational, and they are unique. And this is a kind of repudiation of reason in the West, which goes far beyond its attitude to Israel. It, I think, has undermined the integrity of the way in which it looks at the world in general.
It's just so hard to get to the truth. I mean, it's this false narrative. It's not rational. It's undermined the integrity of the way we look at the world, not just Israel, not just Israel and the Palestinian conflict. And there's so much ignorance, so much darkness on one of those points. She talks about how that, well, if you're going to solve the conflict, don't you first have to stop the people who are trying to exterminate Israel? She compared it to Hitler marching into Czechoslovakia in 1938, saying that, well, imagine if as Hitler's on his rampage, you know, the big debate was, well, where are the Sudetenland Germans going to live? Are they going to be in Germany? Are they going to be in Czechoslovakia? And she said, that's not the issue. The issue is, how do you stop Adolf Hitler? Hitler's the madman. Hitler's the man that wants to exterminate people. You've got to go to the source of the evil and stop it in its tracks. Here's what Melanie Phillips had to say, clip three.
There are so few people saying this that the whole basis of the way we look at it is wrong. And it needs more people to say this. It's not a question of, should Israel give up territory? No, it shouldn't, because it'll only get war. That's not the point. The point is, we're looking at it wrongly. This is a war of extermination. We have to stop the people trying to exterminate Israel.
That's Melanie Phillips from her address at Armstrong College, Armstrong Auditorium. Last night, the objective here is, you've got to stop the people trying to exterminate Israel. Yet the whole basis of the way most people look at it is just totally wrong. It's flat out wrong. During the Q&A, one gentleman spoke up and said he pretty much disagrees with about everything that Melanie Phillips has to say. And he then asked her about Thomas Friedman, the journalist that I believe he still writes for the New York Times. Well, what do you think about Thomas Friedman's positions? And they're in a lot of ways they're fairly different from Melanie Phillips. And I like the way that she answered this question as well. This is clip four.
I don't think it's particularly productive to start talking about why another journalist or another writer is right or wrong. I have set out facts which I believe to be true. They are backed up by evidence. I believe they make a compelling argument which goes against the received wisdom, and I simply ask you to judge what I'm saying on that basis alone rather than to compare it against other writers.
Right. Forget about the messenger and just look at the facts. It's similar to what Herbert Armstrong would often say about, you know, hey, blow the dust off your Bible and see if what I'm saying is from the scriptures or not. Prove it for yourself. Prove it by looking at the facts, by looking at the evidence. Opening your eyes, you see, to the truth. What did Jesus say? You shall know the truth. You've got to know it. And the truth will make you free. I mean, if truth is relative, if you can't, if it's all just a narrative, whether you're on Friedman's side or Phillips' side, I mean, how are you ever going to arrive at the truth? And this just comes back to the problem with modern education today. The whole premise is wrong. The whole foundation is wrong. And so what we have today. Now she, in one point in the lecture, did seem pretty optimistic about, well, we've just got to keep soldiering on and get this message out there. But at the same time, when you just look at the censoring, when you look at the truth that's disappearing, when you look at even the impact that some of these messages are having or not having, because it's all being drowned out by what the Bible describes as deception, darkness, the god of this world. We'll look more at Revelation 12 in the next segment. But as far as getting the message out, I thought this last clip that we'll play also was eye-opening, because it just describes how different the Israeli mindset is from so many others in this world, in the Western world, because of just the neighborhood that they're living in and the reality that they face, that they see every day, and that impacts every single family. She explains some of this in this next clip, clip five.
Our children, you know, we have them for 17 years, our boys, and then they're in the army, and that will go on forever. That's how people think in Israel. And they are remarkably resilient, and they are remarkably optimistic as a result. But that's the kind of mood in which Prime Minister Netanyahu has become almost unchallengeable. Not because he's so wonderful, although he has good points. But it's more that there is no alternative, because there is no alternative to what he represents, which is what I've just said. It is what I've just said. You know, my job as Prime Minister is to keep this country safe, and that means that I have to itemize the people who are the most dangerous to us, of which at the moment the Islamic Republic of Iran is by far and away the worst. But then we have to look at the Hezbollah, which are Iran. 200,000 rockets are pointing at Israel. They can cover the whole of Israel. That's what's in Lebanon. They're all planted among the civilian population. So if Israel wishes to stop 200,000 missiles coming in to destroy the state of Israel, it's going to have to destroy southern Lebanon. That's what Mr. Netanyahu is facing in Lebanon. In Gaza, he's facing the Hamas, which is or is not preparing for war. It's always preparing for war. It's always tunneling. It's always launching attacks. This is how Israel lives. So this is how the people are. They say, what alternative do we have at the moment? There's nobody offering anything that can get us out of this. So they keep their heads down. They get on with their lives. They protect themselves as far as they can. They never lose hope. And they just wish that sometime in the near future, there might be a mood in the West that actually understands what is going on there.
That's Melanie Phillips from her address last night at Armstrong Auditorium, describing how Israel lives. This is the reality for Jews in the Middle East. And I would ask, how do you solve this? 200,000 missiles aimed at all of Israel, right there in southern Lebanon, coming right out of residential areas. How do you solve that problem except by wiping out southern Lebanon? And then how does that solve the problem in a permanent way? You see, as she said in her address, how that in so many of these issues, Israel's right between a rock and a hard place and is just getting the message out to a few hundred people at a whatever event, campus. It's great that she's on speaking tour. It's great that she has the courage that she does. She's pretty amazing in that way. But of course, we would say that the real solution to this, it goes beyond any human being or man-made idea. Only God is going to be able to intervene to save man from himself. And of course, that's discussed in so many different prophecies like Matthew 24 and elsewhere. But that mindset that you just heard described there, that will soon change. You think of those wonderful prophecies, beating the swords into plowshares and so on, just getting, I mean, imagine the mentality, again, every family having their boy, and girl for that matter, for 17 years, and then they're off to just to serve in the army. That's routine. That's what they all do. It's a very different lifestyle than so many in the United States and Britain. And it's just shocking that there's not a greater awareness in the U.S. and Britain of what exactly they're facing on a day-in, day-out basis. It certainly makes you hopeful, and it makes you pray, thy kingdom come. It makes you excited about the solution, the God-centered solution. The problem is with man. The problem is with human nature, the human heart. And there is a solution coming. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. If we have some time later on in the show today, we'll get through a few of the emails that have come in over the last few days. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Jerusalem. The name means City of Peace, and yet no city has had a history filled with more war and bloodshed. No city has suffered like Jerusalem. It has been the focal point of religious wars throughout the centuries. Jerusalem plays a central role in the beliefs of three major religions: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. To the Arabs and Jews, Jerusalem is a national symbol. While both sides have attempted to form peace treaties, Jerusalem continually remains the center of dispute. Why all this conflict surrounding Jerusalem? Will the Israeli-Palestinian peace process put an end to the chaos? Will there ever be peace in Jerusalem? The Holy Bible provides the answers concerning the future of this great city. Your Bible states that the tensions revolving around Jerusalem are only going to worsen before they get better. This city will be engaged in some of the worst violence ever to occur in the history of man. But there is great hope for Jerusalem. At the conclusion of these painful events, Jerusalem will experience glory and magnificence as no city ever has, and there will finally be peace in Jerusalem. To understand the important role Jerusalem will play in future events, visit our literature library on thetrumpet.com and request our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
My father has an article coming out in the July issue of the Philadelphia Trumpet about Melanie Phillips's most recent book. I believe it's her most recent. She wrote it in 2013. I think she updated it somewhat in 2016 after the Brexit vote. In any event, my father's article titled is Melanie Phillips, The Evidence Shows Family is Under Attack. I think it'd be awesome if she ever came back to Armstrong Auditorium following the presentation last night about the Arab-Israeli conflict. If she got into the subject of her memoir, which has more to do with the traditional family, the breakdown of the traditional family. Her memoir is titled Guardian Angel, My Story, My Britain. And as she explains in her book, she began her career, Melanie Phillips did, with more of a liberal leftist philosophy or mindset. From 1977 to 1993, she was a journalist or a columnist for The Guardian, the left-wing newspaper here in the UK. And while on the job there for so many years, she really saw just how far-reaching the Marxist ideologies were in her profession. And so she started to write more about Britain's family policy, or how the British government really in so many ways was undermining the traditional family, and she was coming across overwhelming evidence, as she explains in her book, showing that, you know, the nation really didn't have it. It really wasn't looking out for family. Here's what she wrote. And when I started writing about family breakdown, I was also called an Old Testament fundamentalist. At the time, I shrugged this aside as merely a gratuitous bit of bigotry. Much later, however, I came to realize that it was actually a rather precise insult. My assailants had immediately understood something I did not myself at the time understand, that the destruction of the traditional family had as its real target the destruction of biblical morality. That was really the target that these leftist Marxists were aiming for. When taking down the traditional family, they really were going after the Bible, biblical morality. Here's what my father says in his forthcoming personal. You'll see this, as I say, in the July issue of The Trumpet, but I can whet your appetite with it, with some of these excerpts. He says, Miss Phillips found that the family unit caused national stability, and that family breakdown caused national instability. That is just what the facts showed, okay? And there's evidence of this, to follow on what she was talking about last night. I'm here, it doesn't matter what I say or whether I say it or Thomas Friedman says it. What are the facts? What does the evidence show? He says, and even though she did not realize it at the time, accepting the real-world evidence supporting traditional family brought her thinking in line with the ultimate source of traditional family, the Holy Bible. See, when we talk about traditional family, where is the ultimate source of that institution? It's interesting. My father really lays stress to this. Her critics, I mean, they understood this right away. They knew that in attacking the traditional family, it meant tearing down the Bible, and that's what they want. My father says, if you have a breakdown of biblical morality, you have a breakdown of family. And if you have a breakdown of family, you have a breakdown of the nation, rather. He says further, the physical family is not just a convenient and useful arrangement. It's something far greater than that. Unlike the vast majority of journalists and even regular citizens in Britain and the West, let's recognize this undeniable fact. The strength of the nation comes from the strength of the family. And the strength of the family comes from obeying the one book that defines family, the Holy Bible. See, why is there even a family? Why marriage, as Mr. Armstrong asked in his booklet, his classic booklet? Why marriage? Soon obsolete? Who made marriage? The same being that made man and woman. Who ordained the family institution? Who's the creator of human reproduction and why? Why should human beings reproduce? And what's it a type of? What does it point to? There's a purpose. There's a grand design behind it all. There's an awesome purpose, an incredible human potential, in fact. My father says here, what a unique book the Bible is, how its principles have strengthened our nations when we have obeyed them. How dangerous it is to be ignorant about that, or to dismiss it, or to attack it. It says, if you really understand the Bible, you'll find that the physical family is a type of God's master plan for human beings. If the family breaks down, the nation breaks down, and the purpose and potential for humankind breaks down. That's what your Bible shows. See, that's following on what Herbert Armstrong taught us so many years ago, decades ago, in The Missing Dimension in Sex and elsewhere. Why Marriage, as I said, that booklet too. But in The Missing Dimension, he talked about the basic truism that the family, the traditional family, it's the foundational bulwark of any stable and permanent society. And since we see that breaking down, what does it mean? Where are we headed as a society? Well, he said civilization, as we know, it's on the way down and out. Unless God intervenes to save us, look at the direction that we're heading in. Why did God make marriage? Why did God make family from the very beginning? In John 1 and verse 14, of course, when you read Genesis 1 and you study into that word Elohim, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And it says in verse 26 that God made man, made them male and female. It was at that time, it was God and the Word. And here in John 1:1, you read about the Word and how that the Word was with God. And then in verse 14, it says, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, and it says, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father. So the Word became the Son. That's what the angel said to Mary in Luke 1. He said that the holy thing which shall be born of you shall be called the Son of God. So the Word became the Son, and when he became the Son, the God the Father became the Father. Verse 18, notice what the Son did. No man has seen God at any time, the only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him. Jesus declared the Father. He revealed the Father. He revealed the special, intimate closeness in this Father-Son relationship. He was in the bosom of the Father. Right there in the Father's bosom. Now, the thing about this awesome purpose and plan that God is working out is he's extending that family relationship to you and me. My father writes in the Last Hour booklet, he says, we can have the most personal relationship with our Father. Being in the bosom of the Father is the ultimate love for our Father. There's no closeness in the universe so intimate as this relationship. We can be in the bosom of the Father. Now, this is what God's master plan is all about. It's a family plan. This is why God made the family in the physical realm. This is why he established marriage from the beginning. It's because of how much God the Father yearns to have a family relationship with all of mankind. He's reaching out to you. In the God Family Vision book, my father says he has this fierce determination to have a family. Father, son, marriage, wife, children. You see those terms all through the Bible, even when talking about God, not just the physical family. God is a family. I mean, read Ephesians 3, verse 15, or Revelation 19 about the marriage between Christ and the church. Ephesians 5. Father, son, wife, mother, children, family. Jesus, he came to declare that family relationship. He came to declare the Father, the head of the family. Notice what my father had to say. This is again, I believe this is from the God Family Vision. If not, it's from the Last Hour. But he says, our number one passion must be to declare him, the Father, and his family. And then later on, he says, this is the foundational truth of the Bible. It's a family plan. Jesus came to declare it, and we follow in his steps. Notice we're here in John. Look at chapter 3. This is a verse that's often repeated, but that few people understand. John 3 and verse 16, it says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life in the family of God. That's the good news of the soon coming kingdom of God. This is the message, the gospel message that Jesus proclaimed. Why would there even be a physical family if it didn't point to something on the spiritual level? The physical family, in fact, is a type of God's family. This subject is right at the heart of God's master plan. It's right at the heart of the true gospel message. God the Father sacrificed his own Son so that we can become part of that family. He would have all men to be saved. 1 Timothy 2:4. He doesn't want anyone to perish. 2 Peter 3:9. This, as I say, it's right at the foundation of what the entire Bible is about. Verse 17 continues, for God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. The whole world. The emphasis is on the world. But notice, and again, when you read this, it certainly makes other verses come to light. 1 Corinthians 4 about Satan being the god of this world. Revelation 12, which we'll look to in a second, about the world being deceived. But here God sends his Son into the world, not to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. And then verse 18 says, he that believes on him is not condemned, but he that believes not is condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. It says in verse 19, and this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. Men have loved darkness. They've rejected the light. They crucified Christ. They persecuted his disciples. That has been the true history of God's true church. Request our book that goes by that very name, The True History of God's True Church. And see the truth. Study the facts. Backed by evidence, and get to know the truth of the Bible along the way. Going back to that personal coming out in the next trumpet, my father writes, the Bible has lasted for millennia. The closer that people and families and nations have tried to obey it, the stronger they have been. Our modern societies have ignored, neglected, and rejected the Bible, to the point that even most Christians don't know much or believe much of what it says. Even in the world of traditional Christianity, there's very little truth. There's very little truth. And that's because of what I just said regarding the God of this world. Look at Revelation 9, or Revelation 12, sorry, And verse 9, this is that prophecy about the devil deceiving the whole world, it says, and that great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. And he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And then down in verse 12, it says the heavens rejoice because he's cast out. But woe unto the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil's come down unto you having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. He knows his time is about out. And so who does he go after? Satan the devil. Verse 13 says, and when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man. He persecuted the woman. That's the prophetic symbol for God's church. When he was cast down, he went right after the church of God. That was his first target. He went right after God's family. He goes right after the family of God. And his second target, as my father brings out in this forthcoming piece, his second target is the traditional family. And so he hates it when there's a voice, and there aren't nearly enough of them, a voice like Melanie Phillips, that speaks up to defend the traditional family, to defend biblical morality, to defend the truth of the Bible. That's what this work, that's what God's church is here to defend. More than defend it, that's what we're here to live, to practice. In The Missing Dimension in Sex, Herbert Armstrong wrote, family life has undergone a radical revolution. He's writing this in the 60s, originally. He says, teens have sex games at home and bed while dad and mom are at work. Children do not eat with parents. They seldom go to movies with parents. Parents have their lives, associates, and friends apart from the children. Parents never think of teaching children, being with children, maintaining a family relationship. He says, parental responsibility is totally neglected in due time. Listen to this. In due time, parents are going to be brought to account for this neglect of basic responsibility. See, we're going to have to give an account for how we've conducted ourselves here in the flesh, within our physical families. We're all going to come before that judgment seat of Christ. Of course, only a few in this age of Satan ruling the world as its God, only a few have had their minds open to the truth, have come out of darkness to live this new way. And all of mankind will soon have their eyes open to this truth in the wonderful world tomorrow, in the soon coming kingdom, when God's family government will be ruling this earth from Jerusalem. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll update you on some stats about the television program here in the UK, and also get through some feedback coming from some of you listeners. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advance news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure. This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
That Melanie Phillips address, by the way, I mentioned it was on our Facebook page. And I guess if you're not as familiar with Facebook, I can't remember if I said this at the top of the show or not, but if you aren't as familiar, of course, it was streamed live on the Facebook page last night. If you go to thetrumpet.com Facebook page today, however, you can watch the recording of it. And I think almost 2,000 or over 2,000 people have already done it just since last evening. So if you'd like to hear the full Melanie Phillips presentation at Armstrong Auditorium, just go to thetrumpet.com's Facebook page. A few statistics from the TV program these past couple of weekends here in the UK. This past weekend, we had a program on faith. When Christ returns, will he find faith on earth? And that brought in 153 requests for the booklet, What is Faith? And also the book, John's Gospel, The Love of God. We had a really strong ring in on Saturday morning, and we're really hopeful that we'd have a big boomer yesterday morning. It wasn't quite as big as we were hoping. In any event, all totaled, we had 153 request those two booklets. Following last weekend, the few extras that came in through the week, that program on the Key of David and the Open Door, in which we offered the Key of David booklet, that brought in a total of 168 requests for the booklet. We sent out a trumpet brief. I believe this was last Thursday. I guess one of the easier ones to put together, because we just I think put a two or three comments that we've gotten back from our readers, and I think to this day that short, simple, straightforward trumpet brief generated the biggest response back from our readers to date. Evidently, people were excited to see some of the feedback and wanted to contribute some of their own. This one here says, this was an excellent program. This is actually referring to a TV video we have at the website, and then also the Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker, his interview with Melanie Phillips on his program. It says, you sure packed a lot into it. I downloaded the program and burned a CD. Yesterday's interview with Melanie Phillips also was very interesting. I definitely want to hear her presentation on May 7th, and of course that was last night. Another one here says, many thanks, your accurate guide to the fulfillment of prophecies leading to the soon coming of our Lord Jesus Christ is very useful to my life. Please keep up the wonderful work. May God bless your efforts. Another one here says, I truly do appreciate this daily email. We are most blessed to be part of a phenomenal work. Another one writes, I'm so grateful to God that by chance I turned on your TV channel and ordered the magazine. My outlook on life has changed. So much positivity. I've started the Bible correspondence course as well. I've completed the first four lessons. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. God bless you, she writes. This one here says, thank you for your dedication and research. In a short amount of time, I've finally gotten answers about certain things just not lining up with common religious beliefs. I've always noticed things in the Bible that most people just don't seem to see, and I've often wondered about them. Now I have a better understanding of the last days. This one here, again, in response to the trumpet brief, it says, absolutely, spot on, so insightful. in juxtaposing pressing events with unfulfilled revelation, truly inspired by our loving Father. I'm very appreciative for it and look forward to receiving it. May God continue to blast his warning through the open door he has provided. And then it says here, by the way, I love the new book, Biblical Manhood. It is helping me repent from my complacent Laodicean attitude. It's not how you start, he says. It's how you finish. A nice response there, particularly with respect to the new book, Biblical Manhood. This one here from a gal in Nebraska says, thank you for all the hard work that goes into the Trumpet Brief. I really appreciate knowing what is going on in the world. Keep up the good work. And then one last one here. It says, "This I thank you so much for the brief. This daily contact from you and the Trumpet staff is really appreciated. It's quite reassuring to know that I'll be up to speed on God's truth and all the news that fundamentally matters. I do read the articles on the website each day as well, and it's truly amazing to see so many prophecies being revealed seemingly daily. As Paul said, we're now living in perilous times, but these are also momentous days." Well, that's all that we have time for today on this edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. If you'd like to email the program, you can send more comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.